It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
All right, welcome to Money for Lunch. Trying to crank it back up, so to speak. You know, it's interesting living here in the sunny, hot state of Arizona. I'm driving around this morning at 5 o'clock in the morning, 5:30 in the morning, going to the gym, and I have my windows rolled down because it's only like 85 degrees. To a lot of people, that's hot. When I went to bed last night, it was 109, 110 degrees at 9 o'clock at night. And people sometimes ask me, Burke, why do you go to bed at 9 o'clock at night? Dude, I get up at 5:30 in the morning or 5 o'clock in the morning. So anyway, what's interesting is I noticed a lot of people were driving around with their windows down. So that's one of the great benefits of living here is that, 85 degrees feels wonderful, especially, like I said, the night before it was 110 at 9 o'clock at night or something. All right, let's get this party started. My first guest today is Tamara Magalotti. And Tamara is a business banker. The philosophy that Tamara always maintains is to continually treat your clients like a precious golden nugget, and you will reap rewards 1,000-fold. I think it's a great philosophy that sometimes we forget. Growing up with a family of missionaries presented Tamara with the unique opportunity to find her niche in the business world. Deeply influenced by her family's faith, Tamara wanted to find a position that would truly help others in a profound way. Tamara Magalotti, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Thank you so much, Bert. How are you?
I am excited to have you here. I'm excited to find out about you. You know what? So let's talk about this real quick. Family of missionaries, like in remote parts of the world. Talk about your family real quick.
Oh, actually, they didn't travel as much as they wanted to. My grandparents were missionaries, and they were missionaries throughout the United States. So they would travel throughout California or New York or Chicago, all around the United States, and they were Baptist missionaries. So they would, my life was just filled with a lot of love, and it was a wonderful way to grow up. I can tell you it was a wonderful way to grow up. My parents were very strict, but I think that made me a good person.
Sure. Well, you know what, and people always...
I mean this latest generation, the last 10, 15 years, this word disciplining your children have all gotten kind of negative connotations. The reality is, if you want to be free, a lot of freedom comes from being disciplined.
Exactly. A lot of freedom comes from being disciplined. And I heard you say that you went to the gym this morning. I am not very disciplined in that manner. And I feel for you regarding the heat, because I live in California and it's crazy hot right now. And last night around 30, it was about 80 degrees too. So it's hard to be disciplined in the heat. I grew up in San Francisco, and San Francisco's foggy in the summer. So it's very it's hard to be disciplined in the heat.
Okay. Yeah, so absolutely. I think that discipline or accountability are very powerful. And they have to be used correctly. There's always people, I think, that do it wrong. I mean, I'll take, for example, an accountability. There's a way that you can hold somebody accountable that they doesn't make them feel like crap. And it becomes a very useful tool.
That's true. Like I said, I'm not very disciplined when it comes to working out, but I am very disciplined when it comes to work, which is a good thing. And I do have accountability partners, and because I work for myself, it's not like I can go to an office and have people looking over my shoulder and making sure that things are getting done. But I have mentors that I work with, and I have friends that are that also have businesses, and we become accountability partners for each other. And that's very, very helpful.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. So let's talk about this. Let's dive into this. Your book, Successonomics, with Steve Forbes, who's been a guest on our show a few times. Let's talk about this. So talk about how you wound up writing this book with our friend Steve Forbes.
Oh, I just love Steve Forbes. I just love him so much. I was approached by my publishing agent, who told me about a new project he was working on with Steve Forbes. And before he could even finish his sentence, I was already on board. I mean, I didn't even have to think about it. It was Steve Forbes. So I'm really happy to be part of this project. And the thing is, the book is really unique. It's very unique in the fact that it was written for people who are already in business and have been in business for a long time, people that are very new to business, entrepreneurs, or anyone who wants new levels of success. And everyone wants that, right? So
right,
it's a very... Yeah, it's a very special book in that it changes your perspective on how business should be done. And it gives specific strategies and answers on how to do that. It doesn't just give you a bunch of fluff and answers and you don't know what to do next. There's a practical side to it. So it'll tell you what to do and how to do it. And that's what I love about it.
Sure. Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, absolutely. I think, first of all, the title is one of those things that makes a book a successful book. And Successonomics, I think, is a brilliant name. It's a it's one of those perfectly made up names that people know immediately what's about. So I love that. Absolutely. You know, collaborating with Steve Forbes, there's a feather in your cap. Let's talk about this. With everything that is going on right now, especially over in Europe, why do you think a book like Successonomics is so important?
Oh, well, someone asked me that question a few days ago. And with the UK leaving the European Union, I do think there are implications that are going to affect the U.S. economy. And I think that the number one effect that it's having on America right now is fear. Everyone is in a lot of fear. You know, we're going through fear of the unknown, fear of our economic growth and global trade. And all of those things are serious concerns for the U.S. economy. But we need to remember that the only thing that never changes and that always stays the same is change. So, you know, change is permanent, change is it's constant. And, you know, we were fine before there was a European Union, and we're going to be fine. We may go through some bumps, but we're going to be fine. And I think a book like Successonomics just puts everything in perspective, especially for small business owners. You know, you're going to go through bumps and change is going to happen, but it just helps you learn through those bumps.
Absolutely. Well, you know, what's interesting too, we as a society look at change in such a funny way. I mean, first of all, change, as you said, it's permanent. It's the only constant in the universe is change. If you're not changing, I believe that you're dying. You're going to be frustrated. You're going to be going to depression. Change is good. And what you said there, that we're going to be fine, I think that's a great mantra. Look, you look at anything horrible that happens, and I'm just going to use that because a lot of people look at change as a negative thing. The World Trade Center, horrible. But most of us were fine. I mean, the reality is even those families that are struggling through all that, that are dealing with post-traumatic stress, that lost a loved one, that got sick, you know, that it sounds horrible, but eventually it'll work out okay. I mean, some of them will pass away. Some of them have passed away. Some of them will struggle, but eventually it will be okay. And some of the best stories, some of the best inspirational stories have come out of these terrible things that we see around the world. So, change is constant, and it's not always a bad thing. The other thing that I've noticed is that, you know, we as a society, as a humanity, we do some of our best work when we are put to the challenge, if you will. And when, right. when we are, you know what I'm saying, when we are asked to step up, we do some of our best mm-hmm. work. And interestingly enough, Tamara, we have – there's these obstacle courses. Earlier this year, I did a Spartan race. I'm going to do another one. And for those guys who don't know what a Spartan race is, and there's a Tough Mudder and stuff like that, these are obstacle courses that span 5 or 10 miles. And it's a way for us to challenge ourselves, because some of us get so tired of not being challenged. We're in our day-to-day rut. We're in our office. We're running our business. And that becomes so mundane that we need to step out and be challenged. So to me, it's interesting that when a lot of people have such a negative connotation with change, it's because they don't like their story that they're selling themselves, right, is that this change is not what I wanted, it's inconvenient, I wasn't prepared for it, so therefore it's bad. And again, sometimes the worst kind of change becomes the best thing ever happened to us.
Exactly. And I think as a country, when we go through a change such as 9/11, like you said, we can come together and really support each other. And that's what it's about. It's about us coming together and supporting each other, no matter what the differences are.
Yes, absolutely. Let's talk about this real quick. Let's talk a little about your business. What is it that you do? So if I go to Tamara and say, hey, I need help, you're going to help me do what?
I'm going to help you fund your business. So what I do exactly is I help you find business loans or lines of credit in order to expand your business or purchase equipment or purchase a business. I do all kinds of financing for small to medium-sized businesses.
Gotcha.
And
gotcha.
I love it.
And this is, well, you know, and I'm glad that you love it, because it's so important. There's so many people that this escapes them, right? This is something that is so vitally needed. And so let's talk about this. So how do you help your clients obtain their goals?
That's an interesting question. I have a couple of steps that I do to help them obtain their goals. And one is patience. Not only is patience important to your customers when they reach out to you when they're scared or frustrated or possibly confused about products or services, but it's important to show that you have great service and not just fast service. Now, my business, I can get you a loan pretty fast. It takes usually about 2 weeks, but I hold your hand the entire time. So I'm very focused on my clients' needs. Whatever their needs are is what I'm going to focus on. I think number two in helping clients attain their goals is the ability to listen. You really need to listen to what your customers are saying and pay attention. Be really mindful. And also, what are your clients telling you when you're not saying, when they're not saying anything? You know, sometimes they can be really frustrated with something, but but you have to figure out exactly what that is, even though they're not telling you. So you need to have clear communication skills and knowledge about your products and services, you know, complete knowledge, back and forth, whatever it is that you, you know, whatever it is that your services, you need to know exactly what that is. I used to work for this company. It was a nutrition company around 10 years ago, I'd say, and we would go through these trainings, and they would call us in the middle of the night and say, what product is this? Blah, 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 blah. And we would have to answer. I mean, they would literally call us at 3 a.m. in the morning, or if we would go to training, they would come into our rooms and wake us up and and ask us about these products. And I laugh about it now, but it was such a great way to learn what you needed to know to service your clients. And that's what it's about. It's all about your clients. Another thing that you need to have is focus. You need to be completely focused on your clients, and you have to be willing to learn. You know, you have to be willing to learn new things, and, you know, people that are not willing to learn new things, they're going to be left behind, and your show is a great way to learn new things and to bring more value into the marketplace, and so is my book. You know, those are just a few ways to do that.
Absolutely, and we're also going to be giving away some copies of your book. We're going to make arrangements with tomorrow to do that. Listen, we're out of time, but I'd love to bring you back and talk more, and then we'll connect with you after the show. We'll figure out how to promote your book and give 10 copies away. These are autographed copies.
Wonderful.
From Tamara's book, Successonomics. And Tamara, thank you so much for stopping by and sharing.
Thank you so much, Bert. I can't wait to come back again. Thank you so much.
You bet. Good stuff there from Tamara Mugalati. Just a great little story there, and I love her enthusiasm. We're going to take a quick commercial break. Then we're going to kick it into high gear with Michael Burnoff right after this.
Did you bring the camera phone?
I did.
Do you want to go first?
I've been waiting for this all day.
Okay, this is Fro and Stacy.
Introducing Chase Quick Deposit. Just photograph the front and back of your check using the Chase mobile app on your iPhone and hit send.
It went through?
So cool.
This is so cool. You want to try it?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, who's next?
Make a deposit from anywhere, anytime with your iPhone.
To Mr. and Mrs. Walker, why would they send my parents a check?
Chase what matters.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Cooler, Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Then let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
All right. We are back. My next guest, Michael Burnoff. He's a local guy here in the Valley of the Sun. Michael Burnoff is a renowned expert in the area of influence, persuasion, and business strategy. He's dedicated his life to empower people by giving them the ability to achieve anything they want in business and life. Based on human interaction technology, HIT for short, which Michael created, he teaches people how to use language to change their perception and take action. He has successfully coached thousands of people across the globe, attained impressive results via the teleseminar program, Call the Number 2 Action, Call to Action. Michael Burnoff, welcome back to Money for Lunch.
I appreciate it, Bert, and it's amazing being back, and I appreciate the intro.
You bet. So let's talk about this. How did you become a personal development coach?
That is, it's a funny thing because nowadays I think it's a dime a dozen. I think they actually do talk about it at school, like what are the jobs you want? It's a, what are the things you do? And years back, I believe like everything in life, I had a chance to listen on the show for a little bit. You were talking about challenges and things that come up. And I have always, always loved helping people. I never knew it would be a profession. But, you know, in high school, I'd be the guy who, you know, gets the phone calls and, you know, from even girls at night wanted to help their problems and their things. I had no idea they might have liked me, but I was always that guy helping people with challenges, whether it was friends in school, whether it was, you know, people had just business ideas they'd throw by me. And I always loved helping people, and it wasn't until I got into business for myself and I found personal development, something that my parents had never taught me, I never really knew growing up, and I caught on to it. I said, there's a name for this thing I've been doing all along, and I had this natural gift for helping people. And basically what happened, one thing led to another, got into business, started doing this little thing on the side, and the little thing turned into a huge thing. And, you know, years later, worked with hundreds of thousands of people all over the world. So that is the short version of almost a 20-year story.
20 years summed up in 1 minute. Yeah, that's great. But that's,
I did good. I figured, hey, you got to learn brevity. Brevity is the key. I wanted to make it not about me, and I want to figure out how we can help more people. That's really the key.
Sure, sure. And I think one of the lessons from that story, though, is some of us have these natural gifts that sometimes we ignore them. Sometimes we take them for granted. Sometimes we think, well, this is so easy, therefore it has no value. The fact that I'm a great chef has no value because it comes easy to me. The fact that, you know, that I can help people, you know, would call it that I can help people. A lot of people will dismiss it. Well, you know, anybody can do this, but that's a gift. And sometimes the reason we're so frustrated or sad in our lives is because we're ignoring our gifts. What do you think?
I think for the most part, most of us, we don't realize how simple life can really be. I mean, there's natural things that we're all good at. We take them for granted because we think everyone can either do this or what does it matter? I do this all along. And a lot of us have inside of ourselves gifts. And if you're willing to hone that gift, and I'm not telling you, you know, if you're gifted with people, instantly become a coach, life coach, you know, success coach, speaker, it's going to be work. You're going to have to bust your butt to do it. It's going to take some time. But I truly believe that inside of all of us is a way higher level of play. And if you take a look, you know, one of the things I've learned from, you know, an audio mentor of mine, never got a chance to meet the guy, Alan Watts, says, find something you love and get really freaking good at it. That's my verbiage, get really freaking good at it. And when you get really good at it, eventually somebody's going to pay you well for it and you're going to enjoy doing it. So you got to find something you love, and there's things that naturally we do well, naturally you do well. And if you think about that, there's got to be something inside of you that really moves you. And once you figure that out, that's really where the difference is going to come in for you, is honing that and also owning it.
You know, and it's interesting that you said play. You didn't say work or anything like that. You said play, and I thought that was interesting because I think a lot of us, as you said, we refuse or we scoff at the fact that life can be simple and fun. And a lot of people just believe that it has to be hard all the time.
Yeah, I don't think anything has to be really that hard. I think we make it hard, and I'm working on a lot of interesting things right now, and one of those is my book. I got a book coming out called Average Sucks, and it's just based around how you don't be average with your life and live the life you want and stop playing your lowest form. And one of those reasons I believe that things wind up being harder for people is, one is we don't accept things for what they are. A lot of times we want to make things complicated, but here's a very interesting concept of why we make things hard, because let's just say I wanted to get in better shape. And let's say you want to get in better shape. Use that as an example. And I'll put it on you, not on me. And you want to get in better shape. And you say to yourself that it's hard. What happens is you have an excuse for not pulling it off. So let's just say you admitted something was easy. Then you have to go through your whole life like a set of dominoes, almost like the DeLorean and Back to the Future, and look at your whole life and realize it's all been BS. That if it was really this easy, you've been lying to yourself all along and you could have done it all along. So it's a lot easier to make it hard, not do it, than it is to admit it was easy and realize that you've been lying to yourself this entire time. So that's why I think people make it hard, because like if you want to have more money, you have to admit that you don't don't have enough, and you also got to admit you've maybe screwed up till now, and that's why you don't have what it is that you want. So it brings up a lot of the fears, the doubts, the confusions, the frustrations, the insecurities, the childhood trauma, whatever it is that comes up around the idea of becoming more and admitting it's easy. Because when you admit it's easy, and it is easy, then excuses all have to go away, and we love our excuses as human beings.
Sure, absolutely. Man, where would we be without excuses, man?
We'd be bored. What would we talk about at parties? And what would we complain about? I mean, I always tell everyone, if you stopped complaining, you'd have no friends left. I mean, what would you talk about with people if you stopped complaining? I mean, you'd have no friends.
You have nobody talking. All right, so let's talk about this. You mentioned your book, Average Sucks. So,
yep.
So where does this phrase, Average Sucks, come from? Talk about this.
This is interesting. So I never had words for what it is that I have a very high standard inside of myself. I've always had that burning desire like we all have. Like Joseph Campbell talks about this in The Hero's Journey, this feeling inside of you that you know you can have more. And I never had the ability to explain it. And then years ago, I'm at my daughter's cheerleading, of all places to be to come up with the title of a book. And I'm at my daughter's cheerleading, and it's all competitive. We spend a lot of money to be there. All the teams are practicing these skits, these presentations for 6, 7, 8, 10 months, these moves to be concise and perfect, and they're always to music. And the team gets pulled on, my daughter's team gets pulled on, and they have been training for 6, 8 months. And what happened was that they go on and the music doesn't work. So I thought, and like normal people, that we'll wait till the music starts working. But that isn't the way it actually works. If the music doesn't go, they have to be ready anyways. They have to be able to, like a Navy SEAL, if it's not ready, you get dropped wrong, you still have to do it. About a minute goes by, and they have to do it all on 8 counts. No music. The choreography has to be in sync. And I watched them do this. And I realized this is the difference between the majority of people in the world. Most people are living their life average. They would say, I need all the bells and whistles. I need all the tools. Everything has to be perfect. Then I'll get started. And if you're willing to accept the concept, and the reason I say this average sucks is because I've never seen anybody walk past a room at a hotel, look at a beautiful presidential suite and say, man, staying there would be for losers. Or I always sit first class on a plane. I've never had anybody walk by me and go, you must be an idiot sitting here. Everybody wants more. And when you put the sucks after it and you really get real about it, being average is really what screwed up the world today, really screwed up people. And it's a whole history lesson I could go into in 4 or 5 minutes with you of how we got here and how we really got obsessed with this idea of being average and how it's really caused some major turmoil in so many parts of the world.
Yeah. Let's move on. Maybe we'll, if we have time, we'll come back to that because I think that there is a lot there. And I love the lesson that you took away from your daughter's experience there from that event, because I think that is a great lesson in life that you can't always wait for perfect. Things screw up. You still have to deal with it. And I think if we all had that same attitude, if we were all held, you mentioned the word standards, if we were all held to that standard, where would our life, you know, where would our life be?
Yep. Yep, and that's the – most of us, we don't realize that if we were held to a higher standard of doing things, if we got around a better group of friends, you got around a better group of people, that's when things start to change. I mean, smokers smoke because they hang out with smokers. I mean, it's just there's no way around it. I mean, you don't meet a – you mentioned earlier you were talking about doing a Spartan race. I've never met, like, a bunch of people picking up a bag of cigarettes and then planning for a Spartan race. It doesn't really work that way. So what happens is when you wind up getting around the right group of people, when you really raise your standards and what really matters to you, because I remember being broke and my standard was getting through the month. I remember my standard was, how do I manipulate the system enough, long enough to win? But when your standard changes and there's a certain amount you need to make, a certain way your body needs to be, a standard as a parent, how you need to take care of your children, that's when things change. And it's really about being above the line in life and not being below it. And I think most people sit on the line and they don't realize that if you're on the line, you're actually below the line.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's one I definitely agree with you. One of my pet peeves when somebody says, hey, we're breaking even. No, you're not.
You're losing.
You're losing. Yeah, yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that breaking even is the refuge of the unsophisticated or somebody who would call it trying to lie to themselves. You're not breaking even. You just lost. Anyway, let's talk about this because I think this is really important, Michael, and that is influence. I think that this is something that sometimes has a bad rep. So let's talk about what is personal influence? How can we get it? How do we use it?
Yeah, that's the big word. That's literally what changed everything for me. You know, the end of that story of how I get into what I'm doing. I'm at a seminar, and the guy said, why would you want to be in sales when you could be a person of influence? I didn't know what he meant. And influence is the ability to influence yourself. Everything from as far over as how do you get yourself to get out of bed, all the way to how do you get someone to buy something, all the way to how do you get yourself over fears and phobias and things in your life. Personal influence is really about the ability to literally influence yourself to do the things that you really want to do. So if there's something you want, whether it's economic or physical or mental or feeling or relationship, it really requires the ability to influence your current behaviors to get yourself to do what it is that you need to be doing. I mean, we could beat around the bush and be positive thinking and all that other kind of crap, but really at the end of the day, it's really all about how do you know how to influence yourself to show up the way you need to. A professional athlete has the ability to influence themselves. Turn it on and turn it off. And that acceptance of that you're in control of what you do is really what personal influence is about. So personal influence is really using your language, using your internal dialogue, using, you know, stuff that sounds very petty or sounds very basic, but it's a lifelong study to learn really what moves you internally. But also the cool part is once you learn what moves you, you're going to realize it's also what moves other people. So whether you're building a team or you're somebody that's looking to market something to somebody, or you want to be like one of these big infomercial companies and get people interested in things, or even this political race, whatever's going on, it's all about influence. It's not about manipulating anybody to do anything. It's about really tying into what works to get them from where they are to either where they want to go that you can help them get there, or on top of that, where you want to get yourself to go.
Absolutely. And I like the fact that you started with self-influence, because that's really where we need to start. It took me a long time to realize that there was no out there. There's no they. It's really just me. And if I can influence myself, if I can get me to, we talked about changing our standards or increasing our standards, if it all starts internally with me, then what's interesting is that out there changes.
Yes. Yes. And all I know is that if you can change the little things on the inside, how you feel on the inside, how you feel about yourself, what matters to you, the things that really show up for you, if you can change the way you feel, your reaction, I'll give you just a quick synopsis of this. When something happens in your life, you know, you like it or don't, and your brain is going to instantly have a name for it. It's going to say hurt, and then hurt leads to a feeling, an emotion. Emotion leads to an action, and blah, blah, blah down the line, and you wind up changing who it is that you are. And what happens is if you have the ability to influence yourself, you look at your neighbor. Instead of being jealous that they're doing better than you, what if that jealousy is really meaning the trigger, hey, idiot, you can do this too. I don't mean it in a mean way, but hey, buddy, you can do this. Why don't you ask them how they got that car, or how they have that great relationship? Instead of being jealous, you're just sending off the wrong emotion. Most of us go with whatever shows up. We take whatever, you know, stock parts we were given with in life instead of realizing we have the ability to influence these things. So when you look at your bank statement, it makes you upset, you get depressed, you got an option. You can hit the depressed button. It means that you're sad, you're not good enough, go back to bed. Or it can mean, whoa, I'm not where I want to be. Those feelings that I'm having inside of my body, exactly what I'm feeling right now, are telling me it's time to do something different. That's personal influence. Influencing your emotions, influencing your meanings, influencing your language, influencing your actions. When you have the ability, which everyone does, to control these things, and you shift them very, very slightly, your life starts to become super duper easy.
I like that. Very, very, I would call it sophisticated, super duper easy. I like
you
that.
Like
but
that.
It's
I mean,
true.
I got to make it
it's
fun. True. I mean, I could be really boring. I mean, I'm very cut to the chase. I mean, when you're not winning, you're losing. Let's call it what it is, right? Super duper fun.
Absolutely. That's it. Super duper fun. And you know, what's interesting is, again, none of this stuff depends on technology that requires batteries or whatever, and it's not hard. You don't have to go to college for a million years. This is something that is simple. And what I like about this stuff, Michael, is that simple always works best, right? The old adage to get from point A to point B is that straight line, or the fastest way to get from point A to point B is a straight line. Well, you know, we're always looking for these answers, and the reality is they're simple, and most of the time they're within us.
Yeah, I believe that they're always inside of us, and most people are looking on the outside. You know, part of my book is really about the concept of that most people literally they you get the feeling like you want something to change, you're not sure what's running into you. That feeling that you feel when you're not, when you're scared to have that tough conversation, or you keep on making the same amount of money and you get frustrated, you can't lose that extra 10 pounds, that's you running into your own averageness. That's literally you running into your own personal glass ceiling that you put there. And the second you accept that you needed it to be this way for the past, or you've always just done it this way, you don't have to in the future, that's when you can change things. So if anyone takes anything away from these next little bit, if you want to really create personal influence, key number one, I can give you more another day, but key number one is this: deciding that where you are is okay in your life, but as soon as okay is not okay, it's not okay anymore. So the second you decide that where you are is not where you want to be, it is time to move on. Got your lesson, time to go.
I love it. Yeah, and again, how simple is that? You know, once it stops being okay, then it's time to move on. Okay, let's talk about this. I'm going to kind of put you on the spot here, Michael, because there are a lot of coaches and speakers out there and motivational people and personal development gurus. What separates you? Why are you able to get some of these great results that a lot of people don't ever seem to be able to get?
Yeah, that's the interesting thing. For about 15 years, I haven't even known – this is on the spot, so I'll give you the on-the-spot answer. For about 15 years, I have not known what to call myself. I use the word speaker, coach, all that stuff, which sounds great, but that's not really, really what I do. I really am in the realm of what I do is I'd consider myself more of a strategist. I'm somebody that – when I get a challenge, I seek out answers to change things. So I don't really have a lot of schooling. I don't have an exact science that I studied to do things. The only area that I'm focused on is literally getting the case that we're working on or the person moved on a little bit further down the road. So the reason it works so well is I'm very untraditional on what I do, and I'm only focused on one thing, literally getting a result, whether it's a behavior you want to get them out of or something else. So I don't really believe in coaching. I think coaching is really good for a lot of people. I'm very impatient. I have ADD, so I don't like coaching. I think it takes forever. So I'm one of those people who likes to do stuff really, really fast. So I have challenged myself for the last almost 15 years on this, that I keep on wanting to get even better at what it is I do. So things that used to take me an hour, I do in 15 minutes now. Things that used to take me 15 minutes, I do in 1 minute. So I have seeked out the most powerful technology to get people to change. So I've dedicated the last 15 years to not being the perfect at everything that I do, but finding the best ways and the fastest ways to implement change. And that's really what I focus on, is really truly making change in people's lives, not about talking to them, not about the story, and really not even about getting people to like me, because it isn't about that.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, when you're focused on getting that result, and you're not concerned about, as you said, people liking you or whatever, then you're able to move things faster. Because I know several times you've mentioned in both of our conversations together is that sometimes you're not liked because you are so to the point.
Yeah, usually people have a – here's the deal. You know what you're getting yourself into with me. Here's what you're getting yourself into. You're going to get the change. There's no questions asked. I'm from Jersey. I'm very straight to the point. I'm not here to be your friend. I'm here to get you the result you're looking for, which makes me a way better friend. See, what I believe is an average friend is someone that lies to you. They tell you it's going to be okay. Like, oh, yeah, my girlfriend broke up with me. Hey, let's go get drunk tonight. That's not a good friend. You know, that's somebody to go slumming with. That's not a good thing. A good friend says, listen, man, this is the third relationship you have that's screwed up. We got to really isolate what's going on here so this doesn't happen anymore. That isn't what you want to hear, but it's what you need to hear. So I guess the best premise of the whole model we use, I remember reading a quote on the plane once, and it said, I steal this right from the woman that I don't even remember her name, and she said that, I believe that my purpose in life is to comfort those that are uncomfortable and to find those that are very comfortable and make them uncomfortable again. And that's really what I do on a regular basis.
I love it. I love it. We're going to end on that note. Michael Burnoff. You can find out more about Michael. Check out some of his videos, not only on YouTube, but also at Michael Burnoff, BERNOFF.com. Michael Burnoff, thank you so much for stopping by.
Appreciate it, my friend. Thank you very much.
All righty. Good stuff there from Michael Burnoff. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and then we'll be back right after this.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Cooler, Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
Hello. Hey, we are back. Sally Poblete, my next guest. Sally has been a leader and innovator in the healthcare industry for over 18 years and has had a successful career leading product development at Anthem, one of the nation's largest healthcare insurance company. Under Sally's leadership, is it Wealthy had been
That's
named
right,
the,
Bert.
One of yeah, Wealthy had been named one of the top 30 tech startups, and the potential to change the world was recently featured in Forbes as one of the top 10 healthcare technology disruptors to watch, all, by the way, led by women. Sally Poblete, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Thank you very much, Bert. It's a pleasure to be here.
All right, so why don't you tell us real quick, Wealthy? No, Wealthy. Wealthy?
Wealthy.
Wealthy.
Just like,
just like what you and I are
aspiring to be.
I like this because it's spelled, by the way, guys, and this is, you know, English is my second language, so sometimes these things throw me off, but it's Wellthie, Wealthy, and I love it because it's a great name play there. So talk about Wealthy real quick.
Sure thing. So, Bert, you know, I'll start by just mentioning that, you know, I'm a former health insurance executive from a large insurance company. I'm also a licensed insurance broker. And, you know, ultimately what inspired me to start the company is that, you know, this subject matter of figuring out the right insurance for yourself or for your business is something that is very complicated and often stressful for most people. So I set out to leverage technology, great design, and my focus on educating both consumers and business owners such as myself to make this a simpler process. And that's what we do at Wealthy. We create technology platforms or e-commerce platforms whereby individuals as well as business owners, often with the help of a broker, can navigate the health insurance landscape and make the best decision that's right for them and their budget.
Yeah, I love it. All right. So let's talk about this real quick. What was the catalyst or the impetus for leaving a great career to start your own company?
Yeah, that's a great question, Bert. You know, as many people have heard, the Affordable Care Act was passed about 3 years ago, or more than 3 years ago now, I should say, in 2010. And at that time, you know, that was the start of, you know, my sense that the industry is undergoing a lot of change. The healthcare industry is about to go under a lot of change. And that as an entrepreneur, there's an opportunity for me to leverage my depth of experience in the insurance industry and in healthcare and my DNA as a builder and entrepreneur to make, again, the process of navigating health insurance, insurance decision making to be simpler and better and help consumers and business owners do so in a more confident way.
Gotcha, gotcha. Okay, so let me ask you this real quick. Here you are, you're leaving this, I want to say, somewhat secure environment to start your own thing. Any kind of, we'd call it, hesitancy? Did you have to deal with, you know, pulling the trigger, fears, things of that nature?
Oh, absolutely. I think, like most people, change is a very hard thing to overcome. But more importantly, I think it was going from, as you said, a relatively secure job, a really a great job in a corporate setting where I had already accomplished quite a bit, and going to uncharted territory and back to the zone of, you know, being uncomfortable, being in a kind of full risk situation. So absolutely there was a lot of hesitancy and on my part, but a need to muster up as much courage to go for what is uncomfortable, but truly in my heart of hearts, what I knew to be my calling in life and what I really wanted to
my ultimate goal, which was to start a company and create an organization that will have lasting impact to the lives of others.
Yeah, that's interesting. I like that. Yeah. And so let me ask you this, kind of a tie into that is, what advice would you give to others who wish to start their own company? Maybe they're looking at the same thing. They're in a comfortable environment, a secure environment. What advice would you give to anybody starting a company?
Yeah, so in my case, Bert, you know, I started to innovate within the industry that I knew well. So it was seeking an area or a field of entrepreneurship that is something you're very passionate about or you know a lot about and that have identified some real problems or needs that can be solved with the solution that, you know, that entrepreneur thinks, you know, is a novel idea. So in my case, you know, the insurance industry is where I spent half of my career, and I knew that lots of needs and opportunities, and I decided to start there. I think the other piece of advice is that it is an iterative process. So rather than wait for the perfect, rather than wait for all of the pieces to be aligned, perfect idea, perfect team, perfect, you know, set of funders or supporters, perfect time. I don't really think that there is such a thing as a perfect time, and that most important is to take the first step and iterate along the way. Because even in my situation, so much about the business I've learned through the process of talking to customers and actually working with customers and investors and so forth, and not the initial ideas that we had going into starting the company. And then I think I think the third thing is to practice resilience every day. One of the things that certainly we encounter on a day-to-day basis is the need for just persistence as you know, challenges and changes and, you know, things don't always go your way every single day. In fact, I think it's more likely to have rejection or, an uphill challenge. So practicing resilience every day is one that I certainly try to share, not only with other aspiring entrepreneurs, but with my children as well.
Absolutely. Let me tell you, the rewards are in the rejection or the ability to go through rejection, right?
Makes you tougher, for sure.
Makes you tougher, but it also makes everything more, you know, more enjoyable. I mean, look, if it was simple, everybody would do it, right? And if you want, I always tell people, look, if you want something easy, the fast food industry is fairly easy. You can go work in the fast food industry. A lot of people have had long, enjoyable careers. It's a fairly simple, very easy area. There's not a whole lot of growth, upper growth. I mean, if you're working for Wendy's or Burger King or one of the other fast food establishments, but there's not a whole lot of pressure there either, in my opinion, right? So it's, I think, a fairly secure, stable environment where the rewards are going to be limited, but so is the risk.
Exactly, Bert. And I think the change has not come easy, and changing an industry such as health insurance or healthcare is for me the big reward. It's that process of making improvements in what we all know, you know, is an industry that many people believe could be made simpler. So that in and of itself, that journey of making that change happen is the reward on a, you know, day-to-day basis.
Sure, sure. Let's talk about that a little bit more. What can or what should health plans do or be doing to adapt a more customer-centric model in the industry?
So lots of things. So one, I think there's a real need and focus for healthcare literacy that insurance companies or healthcare companies in general, I think, recognize but could be doing more to practice. So what I mean by that is, as industry experts, we speak in what most people believe is a foreign language. You know, it's filled with acronyms like HMO, PPO, deductible, all of these terms that many people, in fact, only 14% of the U.S. population are deemed to be healthcare proficient. And that's about the same statistic as people with advanced degrees, or about the same percentage as people with advanced degrees in the U.S. So it's really important for, I think, the industry, insurance companies, physicians, and others to speak more in plain language and speak more so that consumers and business owners, their end customers, can really understand the product that they are buying, the insurance product that they are buying, and the value of those products. I think the other piece, and it's related, is to think about a holistic view of that consumer. That consumer obviously is using multiple ways to communicate with insurance company, be it online or over the phone, and optimizing all of the channels of communication such so that it's easier for consumers to navigate the system, I think is also incredibly helpful. Having a holistic view of those consumers that isn't about insurance labels like Medicare or individual plans or Medicaid, but rather viewing consumers as consumers, I think is another kind of mindset shift that would be great for the industry to really start to practice.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. Let's talk about this real quick. You know, how can consumers make better healthcare decisions?
And so lots of ways there, Bert. But are you specifically talking about insurance? So I'll start there, and then
expand into other
areas.
Sure. I'm talking. You know, like for instance, today I'll give you a more specific question. There. You know, we have so much technology available today. So how can using some of these technologies equip consumers in their healthcare decision-making process? How's that?
Sure, yeah. So this is certainly a big part of what we do in the realm of insurance. So, you know, as most of your viewers might or listeners might have heard, you know, for individuals, the Affordable Care Act is requiring that everyone must have some kind of insurance policy, either through their work or that they purchase that individually. So, you know, the question is, you know, is that something that they need to buy? And certainly the answer is it is a good thing to buy because it provides a lot of the healthcare protections, financial protections for the consumer as they, you know, go through their medical expenses. I think then the second question is, you know, what kind of insurance should I buy? And, you know, and I think that really boils down to thinking about the kind of healthcare needs that a consumer has, number one. Number two, the types of doctors or if they have any particular physicians or hospitals that they utilize and they want to make sure is part of the list of approved physicians in the network. So the network is the list of approved physicians of an insurance company. The third aspect is really the other value-added services that they might be looking for from the health plan and confirming from websites such as the insurance company's website or the government-run marketplaces such as healthcare.gov, whether those that's the great place to start to research and understand the different plans that the individuals can have access to.
Gotcha. All right, so let's talk about this real quick. I wanted to get your thoughts on what can companies like Wealthy do to help consumers be more aware of how they can get the most from their health plans? Because these health plans, really, you need a GPS and a decipher ring to go through them.
Yeah, so that's one of the other passions of mine is helping consumers make the most out of the health plan that they have. So first and foremost, I'll say that for both business owners and consumers alike, the insurance product offers a lot of services that are included in the premium that have no additional cost associated with them. So first and foremost, primary care visits, so preventive care visits, mammography for women over 40, colonoscopies, you know, at for a certain age, adults, all of the vaccinations and, you know, well visits for children are all included as part of your insurance plan. So it makes sense for the consumer to get them, and they should come at no additional charge beyond whatever the consumer is already paying in the annual premium. I think the next thing is to really consider this notion of who is the approved list of providers, and try as best as you can as a consumer to stick with those list of providers that are in the network. Those, when visiting those doctors, you essentially pay the least amount of money, but going outside of the network means that either those doctors are not covered and therefore the consumer has to pay a lot more for that. So being very careful about the network and how, you know, a consumer can go about looking at the list of physicians and hospitals by going to the insurance company's website. I think the third similar concept related to the drugs that are covered in your insurance plan. So there is a list called a formulary, and that is a list of all of the approved drugs that the consumers can utilize that come at the least amount of cost for the consumer. So sticking with those generic drugs and brand name drugs on that list called the formulary would make a lot of sense. And last but not least, I'm also a big proponent for looking at all of the other value-added services that the health plan offers. So many of the health plans now offer discounts for gym memberships. Some even give you a free pedometer or a free a tool to help track your steps or the calories that you're eating. So taking advantage of all of those wellness programs, they might even give an incentive such as a $50 or $100 gift card if you do certain things like lose weight or join Weight Watchers or something like that. So more and more of these programs really emphasize wellness. So I would encourage consumers to, when they sign up for a plan, to take a look about those value-added services and take full advantage of them.
Yeah, I like that. You know, it's interesting. You're going through that list, and I'm going, yeah, you know what? I don't know if my plan offers any kind of health club membership discount or anything, any kind of benefits regarding mm-hmm. health club membership. And I work out, you know, I work out all the time. I work out 5-6 times a week, and I'm going, man, there's something there I'm going to dig into. This thing about a colonoscopy,
yeah.
excuse me, you know, that in itself is a pretty, what do you call it, involved procedure. And again, I'm going to check into that. Only a guy who's probably 40 and above, certainly 50 and above in my case, would be excited about getting a free colonoscopy, but that's where I'm at in life. And so, you know, if I can go to my plan and say, hey, what's the deal with the colonoscopy? Then great, let's get it done. And in a physical, a yearly physical, this is something that I do have as part of my plan, but I know a lot of people don't know that question, don't know if they can get a free physical. And this is something that everybody should take advantage of, because I want to say it's in most plans.
It is. It is actually included in the Affordable Care Act as a required benefit that is offered as part of every plan. So it makes sense to get a physical on an annual basis, and it certainly makes sense to get that as part of your plan as opposed to paying out of pocket for it.
Absolutely. I mean, there's just so much there. So, you know, the lesson here is if you have a health plan and you don't know what are some of these benefits that you're entitled to because you're just paying a premium, that's the first thing you should do. There, again, you're going to get a free physical, possibly a colonoscopy, possibly a discount to membership, possibly a discount to some other stuff that really could have a big impact on your health and your life. So there's everybody's little homework this week, is find out what your plan has and what you can access. Sally, this has been a lot of fun and really an eye-opening conversation.
Terrific. Thank you so much, Bert. Thanks for inviting me, and I look forward to speaking again soon.
You bet. Good stuff there from Sally Plobethi. Leave her leaves her the comfort of her career to start her own company, Wealthy. And we all got a little wealthier from some of the, what do you call it, nuggets of information she just dropped on us. So a lot of good stuff there. Remember, as always, you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.